Welcome back in to Phoenix Suns podcast here on Bright Side of the Sun, or the Phoenix Suns podcast here on Bright Side of the Sun. One quick week hiatus, and it feels like we haven't been on here to talk for months and months, and that there's all kinds of different things to kind of go over. So back in effect here with the 34th episode, and Jim Kokenauer, as always, riding along here with Chris Habas speaking. And we're going to break down all the news and notes and banter and ramble and talk about basketball. And even though it's August and there's really not much to talk about, but Jim, from what I understand, you're feeling a little bit like Julius Hodge whenever Chris Paul's guarding him. How are you feeling out there, man?
I have been better, and the off season is never inactive. So I've been keeping with that, and I've been active. And I actually had inguinal hernia surgery. So right about now, I've got pain and swelling and discoloration and collection of fluids in places that no man or woman would ever care to think about, I'm sure. So that's what I'm dealing with. What are we going to be dealing with today on the cast?
Yeah, I noticed that there's a popular trend in podcasts where people are giving an agenda at the beginning of the podcast and telling folks where to skip ahead if they don't want to hear about certain subjects. So, hey, we're not going to give you an agenda and tell you how to skip the podcast to jump over to a topic you'd prefer to listen to, but what the heck, let's talk about what we're going to talk about. So today, you know, obviously the Phoenix Suns revealed their jerseys last week to a lot of hoopla, to a lot of legends of the Phoenix Suns era, their golden era, as well as some other just players, I guess you want to call them. So they broke down the jerseys last week. They brought them out to a lot of hoopla and fanfare and a lot of criticism on Twitter. But yeah, we'll talk about the Phoenix Suns jerseys. The SB Nation released their top 100 in 2017 list, where lo and behold, the Phoenix Suns actually had a couple of players make that list. And I'm not just saying a couple to just, you know, say out a random word to say how many they might have on there. They literally had a couple. There was two of them on there. And you know, that's pretty much it. It's kind of breaking down the news and notes and what's happening with the Phoenix Suns, which is not much because, as we alluded to, it is hashtag August. Shout out to Brett over at NBC's Pro Basketball Talk. He's started a hashtag August movement to justify anything that he writes here this month, because when you write about the NBA in August, you're probably writing about LeBron James shaving his head and the Phoenix Suns unveiling some iffy-looking jerseys.
So that was some of the feedback we got back, that not everybody loved the new uniforms.
It appears that the consensus is UGH. For those that write and type, that's UGH. UGH. I didn't get a ton of positive feedback. It's funny because what the Suns essentially did to us last week is they turned every single normal human being into a wannabe fashion model consultant, advisor, expert, whatever term you want to use. They basically turned everybody in the basketball world into fashion experts, judging these jerseys, going, oh, they just look like Syracuse jerseys, or from my perspective, looking at the white jerseys, oh, they just look like the Charlotte Bobcats new jerseys, but they say Suns instead of Cats. So they basically just turned everybody into fashion experts. I think that the number one jersey that caught the most criticism, they released three new designs for their new jerseys, three different color models, was the long sleeve, short sleeved, however you want to describe it, orange jerseys. They've been called Syracuse alternate jerseys. They've been called traffic cone jerseys. I went to Trevor Brown High School out here in Arizona. Their colors are orange and brown. Those jerseys look like Trevor Brown jerseys on steroids or on crack. So they look very much, very pronounced orange. What were your initial thoughts when you saw the white, the orange, and then the purple, the three new jerseys, Jim?
Now, I wasn't able to get out there to partake in the pomp and pageantry of the new uniform reveal. So I guess they had that down in Scottsdale Fashion Square Mall, I think it was. And I believe Dave attended and took some pictures and stuff and put that online and had written a little bit about it. But from what I saw of the uniforms, from what you're describing, the orange one, the sleeved orange one, looks like a workout jersey. It looks like something that they wear in warm-ups around the gym for practice. Doesn't look like a game jersey. The white one, I thought, kind of had some potential. The way they kind of stripe stuff down, but it seemed like it went the wrong way to me. Maybe even if just the lettering was purple on there instead of black, something to bring it back together a little bit better. because it just seemed a little bit off. The purple jersey was the one that I liked best, and I'm still more old school, I guess, you know, all of 34 years of old school, in that the older jerseys that they were kind of wearing out there and showing off, like when Eddie Johnson was peacocking his way down the catwalk there, peacock scaring all the cats away, is a better look to me. I mean, I don't even mind, you know, those short shorts looks of old. I think that you can kind of incorporate that old school look into a new school look, and I think they would have success with doing stuff like that. But not in love with the new look. I don't hate it. I guess one of those situations where it is what it is. I don't make those decisions. You know, I wasn't given the task of designing any uniforms, so people other than me make those decisions, and I'll just kind of have to live with it and see if it grows on me.
Yeah, and when I looked at them, I thought kind of the same thing as you, is that the orange and purple ones, I mean, sans the sleeves on the orange ones, is that that was almost like an homage to the 90s jerseys, the ones that we remember with Kevin Johnson and Charles Barkley and all those guys. It was kind of an homage to those jerseys with the shooting sun going up, but obviously a different twist to it, going, hey, this is the 2013 version of it, but, you know, wink at the past. I liked the purple one. I really did actually like that one. And when I saw PJ Tucker come out in the purple jersey, the only one that I actually looked at and go, if I was going to buy a jersey, it'd be that one. I'm not a huge jersey guy. The ones that I own are, you know, nailed or tacked, or however you want to call it, on the walls in my office, the old school jerseys that I have. But when I looked at that one, the first thing I thought was, I'm pretty sure they laid out all the jerseys and the ideas and said, hey, you five are the ones that are going to reveal them. And PJ Tucker just basically flexed at the rest of the group and goes, I'm wearing the purple one, because he was the only guy wearing the purple one. He was the only guy that seemed super happy to be wearing the jersey he was wearing. And it was the only one, like I said, in my opinion, that I would actually go and spend money on. I mean, the other jerseys, you know, Syracuse alternate jerseys are very similar to the Charlotte Bobcats jerseys in respect to the orange and the white ones. So, again, you know, the NBA, thank you very much, Phoenix Suns. You turned us all into fashion critics, and we've spent way too long, I think, talking about the fashion sense of a new jersey. But I definitely, I'm big on that purple one. I hope that that's not so much of an, I hope that's not so much of an alternate jersey to the point where they're wearing it once or twice a season. I'd like to see that on them, you know, maybe half the times that they wear them, if that's for their away jerseys. I definitely really like that one.
Okay, so the two questions I have moving forward then, Chris, would be, one, will they be incorporating some of that old school look stuff that some of the people at the show there were wearing, some of the older sons that were there? And if they're going to be putting that in the team shop, I think that would help a lot with bridging the gap. So one, if that type of stuff is going to be available in addition to the new stuff, and B, with that orange jersey, are they going to charge for a jersey or a T-shirt there? Because it's really a T-shirt, and if they're going to charge for a jersey, that just seems like a good way of charging more for a T-shirt.
Yeah, you know what? And if they do that, though, they have to do it just like they do with jerseys. There's got to be, let's use some fake prices. Let's say that it's $29.99 for the authentic jersey, the stitched jersey, and then it'll be $19.99 for the replica ironed-on version, because we all know with NBA jerseys, all jerseys, you can get the stitched authentic for like $89 to $100, depending on where you walk in, and you can go get the replica ironed-on one that, you know, everyone gets made fun of for wearing in high school back when I was a kid. And those are the ones you can go buy for like $40. They were, you know, dramatically cheaper. So if they're going to sell it T-shirt-wise, they got to do it right. They got to go all the way and incorporate the jersey style in it and say, like, the authentic stitched-up ones versus the ironed-on ones. So that's your first question. I think that's an appropriate answer. It should be sold T-shirt style with prices like that.
Okay, then I guess actually maybe the third question would be, who's going to be the number one seller of all that new apparel for the Phoenix Suns? Is that going to be our big guy, Alex Len? Because I think that probably maybe one out of every five casual fans might know who he is, or whether maybe that the Dragon is still going to rule the team shop here for another year.
Yeah, you know what? The emotional favorite has got to be the Dragon, but here's the thing with that, is that his jerseys, granted they were last year's old jerseys, but they sold so much last year that most of the folks that are emotionally invested in Goran being back and being part of the team spent their money on a jersey last year. And same thing for everyone that flocked out in bunches to get Kendall Marshall's jersey. Obviously, I know those two were huge sellers last year. So my gut says that it's going to be either Eric Bledsoe or Archie Goodwin that's going to be one of the two top sellers. Obviously, with Archie Goodwin, it's because he's the future. He's a phenomenon. He's going to be, you know, just watch out that ESPN, or sorry, SB Nation. That's, I shouldn't even say ESPN on that. The SB Nation top 100 list, you know, it came out and, you know, we have, you know, Kevin Durant at the top and a lot of young studs. It's pretty obvious that they missed the boat on one guy, and that's Archie Goodwin's going to be the best player in the league. So I would say that one of those two guys is going to be the top selling jersey, with the caveat that everyone that bought Gorin's jersey last year is not willing to shell out another $80 to $100 on another jersey just because a new design came out. They already spent their money last year.
So maybe what they should do is give all of those people like a 50% off a new jersey or 33% off a new jersey or something like that. Somebody that's got the new Gorin Suns jersey, and they could kind of navigate away their way around that by not gouging fans that are masochistic enough to stay with the team through this time period and not get forced to, you know, double bleed for these new jerseys to wear them around for our new players.
Yeah,
that would be a route the Suns front office could go. And I heard that misstep, and I don't think it's wrong to mention ESPN on here because they do some things good too. And obviously they're a competitor, and so they do a lot of things wrong, and the vast majority of them wrong, especially when it's attributed to like local coverage of basketball teams. They kind of cover it as like the mass conglomeration and everything like that. But I think you kind of alluded to it that SB Nation kind of did some kind of mass conglomeration project where they covered the league as a whole and did something that I know you were proud to take part in, and something that I've known over the time that we've, you know, grown to know each other, that you're always proud to be associated with these types of ventures. So you could probably lead back into that now that I've done such an expert job of teasing it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm a big proponent in August articles, and this is very much an August article that you're alluding to. And the great, I mean, you know what? I was approached by the SB Nation crew, and they said, hey, can you know, fill in, do a little bit of write-up, a couple of sentences on a lot of the guys that are, in their opinion, going to be stars in the NBA level but are not at the NBA level yet. So high school, a couple of high school kids, as well as, you know, a handful of the top college guys. So I went through it, provided my blurbs for like 10 of those guys or so, you know, some humble names that you guys are absolutely not aware of at all. You know, some kid named Andrew Wiggins. There's this kid that I think he's going to Kentucky, which I think they do okay at basketball. Julius Randle, some of those guys, Marcus Smart, Isaiah Austin from Baylor, some guys that may or may not make in the league. We'll see. They got some humble beginnings. We'll see if they can actually make it big at the college and NBA level. But yeah, I mean, these top 100 lists, they kind of crack you up, because I think last year, not to poke fun just at SB Nation, because this is a great conversational piece. It's obviously not meant to be analytically correct. It's just a conversational piece. But you think back to like last year, the ESPN released their, was it 500? Their top 500 players in the NBA, and they did it with a consensus group rating, and everyone did their rating on a scale of 1 to 10, and they composited it and then ranked out all the players and then released it. And it just reminds me almost of like a video game ranking system, where when they said, oh, we're going to do the ESPN top 500 players in the NBA, release like 50 of them a day leading up to the season, and, you know, they'll have little sections for each player. It just, all I thought was, oh, so basically you're just going to give us 2K14, 2K13 ratings. Well, but basically what SB Nation did was say, hey, we're Nostradamus. We're going to look in the crystal ball and give you the NBA 2K17 NBA player ratings. And with that, we have Kevin Durant at number one. You have Lance Stephenson at number 100, bookending everything. And, or sorry, who is that? Is that DeAndre Jordan? I can't tell who that is at the number 100. Yeah, DeAndre Jordan. There you go. So you have DeAndre Jordan bookending it at 100. And with two Phoenix Suns players in there, Jim, can you guess which two? There's a lot to choose from, so I know you're going to be very, very confused. It's going to take you a minute. The two players on the Phoenix Suns that were rated on this top 100 list for SB Nation.
I'd be cheating if I said that I was guessing, because I obviously checked it out. And so I know that our new young center, fresh off of his ankle surgeries, is number 87. And that Eric Bledsoe, the new hopeful franchise player of the Suns, at least according to this, he's by far the franchise player on the team moving forward. Eric Bledsoe came in at 46.
Yeah, and that's when you think of it, when you think about the Phoenix Suns, and we've been running these roundtables, and I think the consensus last week was that P.J. Tucker is potentially going to be the Suns' best overall defensive player. I mean, some can argue like Goran Dragic or maybe Eric Bledsoe, but from that little group, offensively, it's more of a mixed bag. A lot of people debated between, again, Eric Bledsoe, Goran Dragic. I threw out Channing Frye with full health because I think that we've talked about this, that he could be one of the better offensive players overall on the team. But when you look at this list, I mean, are you shocked or surprised at all that someone like Goran Dragic or Archie Goodwin, I guess, like guys that are that we're talking about now and that we have maybe more of a connection with aren't on that list, and the Suns only had two players? I guess a two-part question. Are you shocked that there weren't more Suns, and were you surprised at the two that actually made the list?
Yeah, well, I mean, when you look at it in terms of this being 100, then let's say that gives you the five positions on the court and the top 20 of those positions. And now let's say that some positions might be top heavier than others, like point guards, actually, I think the top heaviest position in the NBA now, that being in the top 15 of your position should pretty much ensure that you're a top 100 player. And so I think that Dragic would be a player that would still realistically be in that conversation at that time. You know, lower to the end of that spectrum, maybe 80s, 90s. So I could see him working his way on there, but I don't see it as a slight by any means that he's not on there. So I could see a little bit, and, you know, looking at some of the rest of the rankings they made, especially specific to the Suns, the first thing that I noticed and I saw that the list was coming out, so what I went to go look at was, well, what did they think about the other guys taken up in this year's draft? And so you saw Len at 87, and then there's Zeller 86, McLemore 65, Depot at 44, Bennett 31, Noel 25. And so it's like, well, I guess, well, everybody over there thinks that, you know, our draft pick wasn't so hot, especially when you're looking at the guys that went below. And I think these guys are going to be forever concatenated together, Len and McLemore and Noel, especially, I would guess, from Len's angle going ahead of the two. And the SB Nation writers not only thought that McLemore was going to be a better prospect moving forward than Len, but that Noel was going to be a much better. So they're seeing Len being a basically average center and Noel being an all-star. And so take that, Ryan.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that he opened this up and was like, can we get a redo? Guys, can we flashback and get a redo? Clearly Nerlens Noel was that. I think it's funny because, like, with Nerlens Noel, there's a good chance that he may just sit out the entire year. I know most reports say he could come back like December, January, but in theory, by the time 2017 rolls around, he might have only played one season. Like, Andrew Wiggins might have played more games in or exactly as many games in the NBA as Nerlens Noel when 2017 rolls around, and he's not even in college yet. So, you know, I mean, I don't disrespect the fact that they have him at 25. He's been hyped up for a long time. He's a guy that has tremendous, tremendous defensive potential, and he's one of those guys that, hey, if he maxes out his defensive potential, he's going to be a great player. If he ends up being just ho-hum on the defensive end, then you have a guy who, you know, like John Henson and a lot of these guys that are elite college defensive players, but then the NBA comes around, and when you can't score and when your defensive abilities aren't as pronounced at the NBA level with the greatest athletes in this game, then, you know, you're just another tall athlete that can block some shots. So it'll be interesting. We'll see. I think you're right. I think Alex Len, Ben McLemore, and Nerlens Noel, to a small moniker of sense, CJ McCollum, they're all going to be lumped together, and Suns fans are going to be watching those three players' careers in adjacent to Alex Len's and seeing, hey, who's better? And every game, it's almost going to be like when baseball fans, I heard on the radio right after they had traded Upton, that they're going to be box score watching every Upton game to see whether or not this trade was right. And, you know, when he goes 0-for-3 with three strikeouts, they go, yes, we made the right trade. Then he hits two home runs in a game, and it's, man, we really whiffed it on this kid. It's going to be the same thing with Alex Len. Every time he goes out there and has four fouls and 5 points and three rebounds and Ben McLemore has 30 points, that's going to be a day where the Suns fans are going to say, we clearly made a mistake. We should have drafted McLemore. But it's, you know, the draft is all long-term, which is a different conversation.
Right. And then the second thing with the Suns' other entrant on this list, the other selection that made it there with Bledsoe, the first thing I thought with him was to look around and see players around him and where they kind of had ranked other players around him to kind of gauge what they were looking at with there. And one of the names that was right there was Tyreek Evans at 48. And I was thinking, well, man, I like Bledsoe compared to Evans. I'd rather have Bledsoe than Evans, so maybe that's a really good pick. But then it turned out that was one of the only players in that range I actually liked Bledsoe better than. And even as you go backwards and there, you know, to, you know, poke some holes in their rankings a little bit, I can give it to them here a little bit. They had Fareed at number 70, which seems disgracefully low for him. But then moving back into the 50s a little bit, they had Tristan Thompson at 55. I'll take him over Bledsoe. Enes Kanter at 52. I'll take him over Bledsoe. You go right through there, Jeremy Lamb, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, John Henson. And Milwaukee's got a good thing going there with the Henson-Sanders pairing. That is so solid. Victor Oladipo, Damian Lillard. These are the same guys right in that same wheelhouse where they're putting Bledsoe. And the other name that was in there, and some fans will love this because some are infatuated, some are not, some are sick of talking about it, so I'll bring it up anyway, is Eric Gordon was right there next to it. And given some of those names that I was saying right there, Chris, you know, pointing out these guys, Tristan Thompson, Enes Kanter, Kidd-Gilchrist, all these types of players, John Henson, do you think that Bledsoe is actually in that caliber of player moving forward with his career?
See, and that's where, and I'm going to get yelled at again, Suns fans on Jacob, shout out to Jacob's player ratings. If you haven't checked him out, go look at him. But when he did his point guard ratings, I said that I felt that Mike Conley is one of the guys in the league that's just systematically, dramatically underrated. And to put him and Dragic in the same class, I personally think that Mike Conley is light years ahead in terms of an NBA player all around basketball than Goran Dragic. And obviously the argument can be made that he's on a good team. So I got destroyed for that, because as much as I love Dragic, me and you are in the same opinion that there's very few teams in the NBA that would trade their starter for Goran Dragic because they have a better or equal or just a touch better starter. When you look at Eric Bledsoe, I said all summer when I figured he was going to get traded this summer, I was just, once the Clippers were able to not only get Jared Dudley, people also forget they were able to get J.J. Redick as part of that deal. That's the only reason why it happened. But once the Suns got Eric Bledsoe, I said all summer that I thought Eric Bledsoe was the best asset in the NBA in terms of like a tradable commodity that's going to get traded. So I figured he was the best asset, but I had talked ad nauseum with NBA guys that I didn't think he was a great player. I didn't think that, we're sitting here looking at a guy that's going to get traded, James Harden or Tracy McGrady when they're playing behind a superstar, get traded and become a superstar in their own right. So I think Eric Bledsoe, kind of like Goran Dragic, will maximize their talent as a bench player, as a third guard, a sixth man. And as a starter, you see more flaws in their game. You're going to be able to attack them and guard them differently, and they'll be a little bit more limited. I don't think he's in the same class, really, as I think every player in his row of the 40s, outside of maybe Tobias Harris, I think every player in the 40s from 40 to 49 has a better chance of being an all-star at least one time than Eric Bledsoe does. So I don't think any of those guys are all perennial all-stars necessarily, but I think they all have a chance of having that year where they're an all-star more than Eric Bledsoe does. So I think that I would probably slide him back a little bit. I mean, he's rated fairly high for a point guard, and it is a point guard league, but he's rated, in my opinion, just a touch too high as a point guard.
Yeah, that was kind of my feeling too. I don't see him. You're telling me he's a point guard and that's the position he's going to play. Well, that's a tough nut to crack right there, because I don't see him as being a much better player than Dragic is when he reaches his ceiling. And Dragic's ceiling is an average starting point guard. So, even to get better than that, say, well, he's going to be much better than that. Well, then maybe he could encroach upon being a top 10 point guard, which would still make him borderline top 50 in the league, which is, I guess, where they have him. So that seems kind of like an optimistic upside based on what I saw there. But you got to start somewhere, and if they would have done this list about 3 months ago, the Suns would have had zero players on it. So two is better than zero, and hopefully the Suns can add two more on by next year. And there are a bunch of intriguing players that they had you help them out with some of the scouting reports on here, Chris, and land a couple of those and get some guys with some legitimate upside in the top 20 of that discussion. And that's the kind of players that you need to turn things around. Even where they're at right there, 46 and 87, that'll get you close to winning 33, 35 games a year if that's your two best players.
Yeah, or even 25 to 30 if you want to kind of take that extreme on the other end. I mean, to be overly simplistic, to nail it home and really make people think that I hate Eric Bledsoe, which is not the case. I think him and Dragic could be the two best backup point guards in the NBA on any other team and could be those amazing change of pace guys that can do a lot of different really unique, interesting things. But to nail it home and make Suns fans hate me a little bit more is when you look at the list, you have 53, again, a fake list that has no relevance. It's August. But 53 is Ty Lawson. He'll be 29. He'll be in his prime. He'll be in his wheelhouse. He's already considered top 15 or so, top 12 point guard in the NBA. He's rated, what, seven slots lower than Eric Bledsoe, who will be 27 and, you know, entering into his prime if he's kind of reached his basketball maturity. He'll be more or less entering into his prime or kind of a year into it already. So that's the kind of things with these kind of lists is you look at it and you go, well, some people look at it and go, oh, Tony Parker's rated 59th. Well, he's going to be like 47 when 2017 comes around. The guy's been in the NBA seemingly forever, but like a guy like Ty Lawson, you know, he's going to be 29 years old. I think he'll be a better, more valuable player potentially than Eric Bledsoe and only 2 years older than him overall from that age perspective, which most people like to argue. But yeah, you mentioned, so I want to make one point real quick. I won't ramble too much, but so I do this list and I help out with like the blurbs and the little write-ups to get people to know some of the younger players a little better, like Andrew Wiggins and Julius Randle, as I mentioned, Dante Exum, the Australian kid that's going to be very, very good at the next level. A lot of these younger guys, right? And so I see a lot of Suns fans going, man, it'll be a perfect draft. If we get the number one pick, we can get Wiggins. You know, Minnesota, we get their pick at like 14. We'll draft Julius Randle. Real quick there, guys, for those that don't understand the NBA draft yet, please jump on. I don't care if it's my site or Draft Express or ESPN. Jump on one of them because Julius Randle is going to probably have a puncher's chance at battling Andrew Wiggins for the number one overall pick. That kid is not sliding anywhere near the Suns' number two pick, whether it's 14 or wherever the T-Wolves land if they get that. So just wanted to make that point. I've seen a lot of Suns fans making that correlation of basically getting the top two players in the draft with the first and like the 14th overall pick. Not going to happen. That'd be like having an NBA draft and having Dwayne Wade fall to number 14 after LeBron went number one. It's something that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. That makes sense there. The last thing that I liked off the list, and this is just particular to me, nothing necessarily related to the bright side of the Sun, although I've taken some heat on there before, is that I was glad to see Russell Westbrook get some love at number four on that list because I think he's one of the very best players in the entire league and plays with a unparalleled passion and unparalleled, to me, means by none, inimitable. Nobody plays with the passion that Russell Westbrook plays the game of basketball with today. I really enjoy watching him play the game, and it's good to see that other people are taking notice of how well he does it.
So, question for you, and again, we're venturing off of the Phoenix Suns and more digging into this list, which, again, it's a conversational point, as, you know, i.e., let me point out, we're conversating about it. When you look at the top 10, and again, we're looking at players, you know, what they think will be the best players in 2017, when you look at that list of just the top 10, who is, like, the one name in there when you look at it where, as Russell Westbrook, you're excited to see him that high? Other end of the spectrum, who's the guy where you look at and go, he doesn't belong with the rest of that group? That's the one name that doesn't belong with the others necessarily.
The Sesame Street guy on the left?
Yeah, who's got the big nose and standing out?
One of these guys is not like the others. One of these guys just doesn't belong. Can you tell me which one of these guys is different by the time I finish this song? Drummond.
So Drummond is the guy with the big the striped nose and the yellow feathers sticking out on this list of basketball players you're thinking.
Yes, correct, because everybody else in that top 10 either has already accomplished quite a bit in the NBA or is had much, much more hype built around him. So he would be the one guy on there that is the real reach out of the top 10. The other nine guys, I don't see any of them falling below 15, but yeah, that guy at three, he's getting a lot given to him before he's earned any of it.
Yeah, and as much as we both, by the way, love Andre Drummond, like I think he can be a perennial Defensive Player of the Year candidate and a guy that gobbles up 15 rebounds a night without even trying. But then again, a lot of those might be offensive rebounds while he's just standing in the paint catching a lot of missed jumpers from his new lefty duo of Brandon Jennings and Josh Smith. But so you take Andre Drummond off, which I wholesale completely agree. I would move him more between 11 and 15. Who's the guy that you slide into the top 10 that you think was, I don't want to say slighted because, again, fake list, but who's the guy that you think should probably belong in that top 10 in 2017?
So if we drop him down a couple places, then now I'm dropping him down quite a few places, so some of the other guys move up not so much, so it's not going to be like a huge rise up there. I really think that, you know, not looking at some of the guys that might rise up from like the high school ranks and you know, make that look bad from that end, I would go with probably either Curry or John Wall. That those would be the two guys that I look at as in actual NBA players that have shown a lot of promise and look to be getting better and are kind of still on, you know, just the tip of the iceberg of their greatness and are still growing and developing a little bit. So I like those two guys.
Yeah, I lobbied the list makers for some Kendall Marshall love, and it didn't happen, even with Seth Pollock, the former Phoenix Suns writer out here being in D.C., sitting in the office. He could have pulled some strings, but Kendall just missed the cut. I think that when they cut it off at 100, he was a couple hundred spots away from making that part. So it was close. It was real close. I honestly, we talked about this beforehand, I would move Drummond down as well, and it's not a dramatic leap. I love that you're giving some kudos and some attention to John Wall. People seem to forget how good he is and how good the Wizards were in the second half of the season when he came back. I mean, injuries are unfortunate, and they happen to sometimes great, amazing talents like John Wall. I move Paul George up, and I probably even move him up into that range where like Kyrie Irving, Derrick Rose, Russell Westbrook in that 4-7, 4-8 spot. I genuinely have always thought Paul George was going to be a star. He kind of, you know, flashed, hey, I might be a star last year, and he could take that next step as early as this upcoming season. I know he's 13, but I would probably move him up into that like 4-7 range. That's the only reason why I say I'd move him up dramatically, I guess, because he's jumping almost halfway up the list from where he's at.
Yeah, all in all, I didn't think it was too bad of a list. Like I said, there was a couple things that I thought were oversights. You get a couple simple things, like I had alluded to earlier. I made the reference in some of the numbers I was citing to where you've got Tyreke Evans as 48 and Kenneth Faried as number 70. And I don't think a whole lot of people would say, hey, I'll trade you Tyreke Evans, plus I need a bunch of stuff to sweeten the deal to get Kenneth Faried back in trade. I think that if you're the one, maybe I misspoke there, if you're the one trading Faried, you'd want more than Evans back in return. That's not a straight swap. I don't see many people that would think that that's a fair straight swap. So you see some things that kind of seem like a little bit obvious to me at least. But like you said, it's a good talking point, and we in no way had to bring this on as a talking point today. We were in no way required by SB Nation to do this on our podcast. I think, wasn't there some other language I was supposed to include in there, Chris?
Yeah, there was one sentence you left out. Jim was also not required to talk about discoloration. I actually warned him and told him, don't talk about discoloration. But he gave you guys, as he does with his words, he painted a picture for you. You could thank him later.
They can thank me for that mental image later. I'm sure that I'll probably get a couple of, kudos, congratulations. Maybe even like a get well in the comments section. That'd be nice. They could like drop a little card for me on like a WordPad or something.
All right. So last thing, Jim, before we jump off, and I'll give mine after yours. I know that the logical date has already been mentioned. When over under on the amount of days that Michael Beasley is still a contracted member of the Phoenix Suns?
The over under. When is the calendar? I have to look at it. Today is Tuesday. It'll be the 27th. So 20, 29, 30, 31st. So that Tuesday will be, what am I, December 3rd.
You saying 14 days because news breaks on Tuesdays for us so nicely. And actually, if you're going to say Tuesday, it's probably going to happen between like 9 a.m.
Yeah,
and noon.
It'll be September 3rd.
September 3rd. All right. So I like that Tuesday theme. There was some thought brought into that, which I'm throwing this at Jim completely on the fly. There was no discussion of this at all. I'm going to go with Sunday as soon as possible on the 1st. That's just my ultimate guess, is that they're just going to try and wipe their hands clean of this and just kind of be done, let Beasley move on to the next phase of his career/life, and, you know, have the Suns move forward without him being in the locker room. As much as he seems like a really good guy, and he just seems like kind of just a naive, you know, not mature kid, because that's, at the end of the day, look at his age. I mean, he's not a full-grown adult. He was thrust into this life, you know, as a 16-year-old, as being a megastar. But, I think that they kind of wiped their hands of it, and they gave him their due diligence as far as they could, and he went ahead and he had a couple of strikes with the team, and they can't have that going forward. I'm going to say the 1st, you say the 3rd. We'll see if we're both wrong. Who knows? We might be. We're often that.
Well, it's hard. I mean, we could go down to the exact, like, hour, minute, or time, but it's kind of like one of those, like, baby pools in terms of, like, picking a day. It's like, you know it's going to happen, but you don't know exactly what day specifically it's necessarily going to happen. We have a good idea in mind based on the contractual restraints of everything and how that's going to come into play, but at the same time, you never know if the Suns might induce labor at a certain point just to stultify us and make us look ridiculous.
Yeah, and I think the inducing labor day is September the 1st, and I think the ironic poetic day is the 3rd, as you mentioned, because news just happens to break and fall right in our lap, usually on a Tuesday right before we're going to record. That way they just basically say, hey guys, you clearly have no idea what you're doing or what you're going to talk about. You're just two buffoons with microphones, so we're going to go ahead and just give you something on a silver platter to talk about, and we appreciate that. We're not mocking you. We absolutely appreciate that.
They set us up, we knock them down.
Absolutely, that's how we roll. All right, guys, that's episode 34. We'll be back in action again next week. We're creeping closer and closer to training camp, Jim. So, you know, we may not have Beasley news next week, but we'll definitely have some Phoenix Suns news. We'll be breaking things down and continue working on giving you guys a decent podcast out here. Hopefully your run on the treadmill was good, guys.
I am going to be icing my groin and getting ready for bigger, better things next week.
That's how we end podcasts here at Bright Side of the Sun. Catch you guys next week.